Okay, so we're in Bury St Edmunds now with Martha Euxaitis from Cherukino. I did get your name right, didn't
I? Yeah, you did.
Euxaitis, yeah. Okay. From Cherukino in Leeds, who's very kindly leading a workshop with us. So, what's this workshop about? Tell us all about it.
Okay, well, today's workshop, or this weekend's workshop, is black and white Super 8 processing using Tri-X film and processing as reversal, so ready to project.
Right.
And it's really intended for anyone, so people who do have a bit of knowledge of Super 8, or maybe even very good knowledge of Super 8, and also complete novices and beginners. So it's covering how the film stocks work, the different speeds, emulsion types, things like that. Looking also at colour a little bit, and what's available and what's out there. And then looking at how to use the cameras. We've got a variety of cameras we've been using.
Yep.
So we've been using Bowers, quite simple Bowers, Braunizos, simpler to more high-end ones, and also people bring their own cameras if they want to as well.
What sort of range of participants have you had in terms of previous experience and interest?
Okay, so we've got one person who's shot one roll of film before and attended with and sent it off for processing, and is completely dedicated already, has a really great camera that he's bought and is all juiced. So we've also got three people who've never shot Super 8 before at all, and are complete beginners with the medium. Both of whom are artists, two of whom are artists, and one of whom has had a bit of darkroom experience. And then we've got the final participant on the workshop who makes a Super 8 film every year,
yes,
as a kind of just a habit. And he hasn't shot very much, he just makes one every year, that's it. And then he says he puts them in the cupboard, but we're kind of trying to encourage him to send them off to places and open up a bit more. So he wants to learn.
No point in making films, don't get seen,
exactly.
Is it?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So he wants to learn how to process, as well as learning some more about the different cameras and things like that.
What actually is Cherukino, your enterprise in Leeds? Because I don't know a lot about it, apart from being terribly impressed by anybody who's still keeping the film industry going out of their own efforts. So come on, tell us about Cherukino. What is it?
Okay, well, Cherukino started life as a strand that I created of the Leeds International Film Festival up in West Yorkshire. And the festival didn't have an artist film strand, so I made one. An artist film that covered also video, but primarily with an interest in analog works. Mainly because that's what I was getting really interested in.
Right, this was initially showing.
Yes, showing.
Showing, not making, but showing.
Showing. And then I factored in, the following year I started factoring in workshops and inviting also guests whose films I was showing to run workshops at the festival and offering them myself as well. So I'd been involved with a small film collective called EXP24 back in the day.
Who were based where?
In Leeds.
In Leeds.
But they don't exist anymore.
Right.
We were together for about 2 or 3 years, and we used to process film in each other's bathrooms and get together and make pancakes and watch them in the living room and stuff like that, as well as putting on events. So this was kind of like the guerrilla side of my activity. So
yeah.
I had the kind of slightly more official Leeds Film Festival activity, and then this was the kind of DIY side of things. Then I travelled in 2008 to a couple of film labs in Europe,
yeah.
Sector 16 in Hanover, L'Abominable in Paris, Etna in Paris, and MTK in Grenoble in France.
And these are all sort of underground, as it were, labs,
yeah.
DIY.
Definitely.
Keeping the thing going.
Yes. Each lab has a different character, a different feel, and a different way of working. L'Abominable is probably the most well-known.
Right.
MTK is pretty well-known. The French labs seem quite
yeah.
well-known.
And they support their own local, regional, and national scene, do they?
Massively.
That's the lab for the local shooters.
And not just local. I mean, L'Abominable, for example, is like an internationally supportive institution. People travel there from all over the world to go and work there. And the people who run L'Abominable, like Nicolas Ray and Pip Chodorov, and people who are heavily involved, Emmanuel Lefranc, like, they've all been really instrumental in helping other labs to set up.
And what gauges are
in
they working?
In places like Africa. Super 8, Standard 8, 16mm, 35mm.
Up to 35?
Yeah.
All right. But yes, yes. What sort of basis do they run these labs on? Are they commercial, part commercial, funded?
It depends on the lab. Mostly do it yourself. So L'Abominable had some trouble with getting funding and things like that, but they do have membership, but it's so cheap, membership. But they do, I think L'Abominable do ask for contributions if a project that's being done has funding. They say, okay, well, it's fair then that you give
they should get a fair cut because it's cost. Yeah. Where do they get their equipment from then?
I think a lot of salvaging going on.
So this is bricolage. You get given a film line and you can run a lab.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the last thing I heard of was they picked up an optical printer that was used for Superman 4, I think. And I can't remember what other film it was made on that one. Yeah. But they got that, weighed a ton. They had to go and, you know, collect the thing and refurbish it a bit.
So you went home to Leeds after this and thought, I'm going to do that. Yeah. So is this what you've done?
Exactly.
Yeah. Have you got a permanent setup and premises?
I do.
Tell us about it.
Okay. Well,
I'm always jealous of people who've got setups because we can never manage one. We have no home. We just do it. But people who live in cities and they've got workspaces, I think it's so cool.
Yeah.
So
it's great.
Go on. Impress us with Leeds. Then.
Well, okay. So as a collective, EXP24 had a space in a studio temporarily, was given to us by East Street Arts, which is an arts charity who run artist studios in Leeds at quite low cost as well. And they supported EXP24. And EXP24 then, I was really, really into the lab side of things.
Yeah.
So I kind of was always trying to get equipment and materials and chemicals and all the rest.
Yeah.
And EXP stopped being a collective, and I stayed in the lab, and the others left to do different things and went off, and then I was there with all this old chemistry to get rid of, and so I revamped it, got a load more equipment, and over the years I've kind of built it into a proper resource.
And it's just you, is it?
It's just me, yeah. Right. Jerry Kino's just me. It's a very personal thing. I tried making my studio open to the public for some time, so I tried doing open lab sessions at a really low cost to encourage people to come down. That worked okay, but it just isn't sustainable, and it's a lot of effort, and it was taking away from me making my own work, so I stopped doing that for a while. But I do still do it. I unofficially mentor a couple of people for free down at the lab, but mainly now my practice is making my own work in the studio and running workshops, which are paid for, but often funded by different places and offered to members and public alike.
Right. What's your professional background? I mean, are you actually trained in lab work, or have you just entirely picked this all up?
No, I'm like
you've turned a hobby into a living?
Yeah, totally. Resolutely and very proudly an amateur. Because I think the word amateur comes from lover, and I just love what
you
I do.
You do it because you're motivated.
Yeah, and I don't believe that to make the distinction amateur in our kind of parlance, common parlance, seems to mean a derogatory thing. Like,
it
oh, is. You're not very good at something.
No, it's somebody who does it without expectation.
And it's not true. I want
to
reclaim that term.
Quite right.
Because you get damn good at what you love. from going to these other labs and from meeting a huge number of amazing, amazing filmmakers throughout my career as a curator. So I've had the opportunity, luckily, to see a huge number of films and to meet a huge number of great people who've shared all of their tips and skills with me. So,
For those who've never actually done film chemistry and imagine it must be hideously complicated, because obviously in a pro lab it's done to enormously precise, high volume standards.
Yeah.
Now, if you want to take up doing film chemistry, what's the learning curve? Explain what it feels like to say, I'm going to run a film lab.
Well, I think it depends on what your idea of a film lab is. For example, I'm friends with Howard Dawson, who runs Film Lab North, is a friend of mine, and he came to see my so-called lab in the days when it was open to the public one day a month, and he came over and he said, I think your idea of a film lab and my idea of a film lab are a little bit different. And I was like, yeah, Howard, I think so too. So I'm definitely working on the artisanal model. When I say film lab, it's very much just a place where you can process and work with film.
Do you have stuff like proper running water and stuff?
I have access to a dark room, and I have built up quite a lot of good machinery over the years.
Have you actually got a developing line as opposed to tanks? Can you actually do bulk stuff? Or
no, it's always LOMOs, done in LOMO tanks.
Oh, so this is batched in tanks?
Yeah, spirals.
Which makes it a bit more controllable.
Yeah.
And buckets, yes.
Yeah. So,
And you don't have issues with chemical disposal and people being down your back saying, where's your chemistry going?
No, because it's such a small amount, really. I mean, in terms of
I'm just thinking in terms of regulation. It's one of those things. People say, I would do it, but you'd have everybody down in your back saying you can't do chemistry here. That's not been a problem for you.
No. And it's the one thing that really bugs me about working in film is the fact that it's toxic chemistry, you know, not just for health, but for polluting the water system.
Possibly not as bad as it used to be.
Definitely not as bad as it used to be. But you can still take small amounts of chemistry to your local skip, as long as you're not a business, as long as you show you're not a business operating in business type volumes, they will take it from you. Alternatively, you can get silver reclamation done with your bleach fix and things like that. So if you do want to start processing your own film, I would highly recommend that you go for the kits, even though it's probably in the long run more economical to mix your own. If you're just starting out, I'd definitely recommend the kits, and I still use the kits. I don't mix my stuff from scratch, so except for the bleach.
Which processes do you undertake at the lab? You do E6 and what?
Which is the three bath. I do the three bath version. We do also C41, colour negative. And that's for cinefilm as well as stills.
Except for stuff like the Vision T stock.
Yes.
And that develops perfectly well in standard C41.
There's
no voodoo.
Well, I don't check it I'm not, as I said, like in a professional way. So I don't scan a frame and go, oh, look at the density there, and the density there. I just love what it gives me. I love the effects I get. And a good tip for C41 is to soak the film in a borax solution. Borax you can get very cheaply on the internet,
right.
And that helps to remove the remjet backing, the anti-halation layer that's on the back of colour negative film.
And that greatly improves its work in the tank, does it?
That's right. It basically means that your developer doesn't get messed up with all this anti-halation stuff that comes off.
Right, you effectively wash the film and then
develop it. Yeah, it increases the life of your developing chemistry.
Right.
So that's good. And then there's also black and white.
Yes.
So which is very simple. Black and white negative, and also reversal.
And the negative chemistry, is that the same as what you would use for still film chemistry?
Exactly.
You're talking about your standard.
Yeah. Standard
ID11, Perceptol, all those will go straight
Rodinal,
in and work.
D19 if you can get it, D76.
Well, if you can't get it, you can mix it.
Exactly,
yes. What monochrome negative stocks are you using? Or does this work with Tri-X if you do it as negative? So I've got to work that out. Picking the brains of the expert here, you see.
I've got Tri-X, and that's the one that I would use mostly as a black and white stock. I've also got some plus X left. Sometimes
I always were negative stocks previously. Yes.
So sometimes I develop them as negatives, even though you don't get the best negative that way.
Yes.
I do quite like the effect you get.
Do you have to compensate in the exposure? I mean, what are the tricks? Or you just do it entirely?
I don't normally.
Just what comes out?
I just do what comes out, yeah.
And you get a clean contrast range and everything out of it?
Yeah, I get a nice negative. It's all right. It's a bit cloudy. It's not quite as clear as you'd like, and it's a bit more grainy than normal.
Well, Tri-X is grainy, but even so.
But even the Plus X is a negative. It's a bit more kind of clouded in a way. It's not as clean. So you get...
It's certainly softer contrast.
Yeah.
You always spot the two when we've been sent films the festival. Yeah, there's that sort of crackly sort of dark you get with Tri-X.
Yeah,
Plus
which
X
is nice.
It does all the nuanced greys, doesn't it?
Yeah, so it's good for life.
They're both beautiful. It's only pity you can't get Plus X so readily now.
Oh, lovely, I know. But you can, what I tend to do with the negative Super 8s is then print them onto 16mm.
Right, you've got an optical printer for that,
haven't you? Yes, a JK optical printer. And I use 7302. For that purpose.
That's a proprietary print stock, is
that's
it?
Exactly. So right. It's bought kind of in large-ish quantities from Kodak, and it's an acetate base print stock, black and white.
Do you do any of your own telecine, or is that a step too far?
I do, but it's not of a quality that I am ever really happy with. It's more I do it so that I can watch the film multiple times and then decide on edits to make.
So is this a very straightforward sort of optical copy? This is not...
Yeah.
It's not scanned telecine?
Oh, no. It's like basically projecting the film and refilming it at 1/50th of a speed shutter. shutter speed, refilming a projector.
Right, yeah. So this is Telecine for workprint, this isn't Telecine for best,
no.
As it were.
And you can do that, I mean, I teach people how to do that because that's often what puts people off, and you can get some very good results playing around with it. You can get some quite sharp results. Like 2 weeks ago we did the colour workshop, and Maxime Michel, who's a French Super 8 filmmaker who's shown things at the Cambridge Super 8 Film Festival, he had a really brand spanking new Canon digital whatever camera,
yeah.
And we did the Telecine using that, and it was really nice, really
yes.
nice results.
Yes.
Just projecting. Something that's very useful to use in that instance is a SEMA copy kit,
yeah.
Which is a screen that's got like a mirror on it that reflects
onto the
cloudy glass.
Thing.
Yeah, you get some hot spots, you know, you get some
yes.
some bits that are brighter in the middle and some fall off from vignetting a little bit around the edges, but if you're careful about it, you can get some really nice results.
Certainly, you get a good enough to view.
Yeah.
And what about alternative processes? Do you try and develop in beer and
yeah.
wine?
I've not done...
Mindful that Daggy Brundtland's going to come next
yeah.
month and do this.
Yeah, that's great.
I'm going to sign up for it. It's going to be so good.
I know there's wine all is quite a known kind of process, which is the wine thing, and it
yeah.
looks fascinating. And actually reading about Daggy's workshop has made me go, yeah, I really want to do that now. There's mainly caffeinol is the alternative that I use,
yes.
which is coffee, washing soda, and vitamin C, and developing in caffeinol. I
yes.
really like Triex in caffeinol. Fabulously contrasting.
Yes, and there are a lot of very old-time developers that use vitamin C.
Right, are they?
Yes.
Oh, go on, which ones?
There are certainly recipes for them, and you can certainly buy neat ascorbic acid, food-grade ascorbic acid
yes.
from Silverbring, and actually mix them. But yes, I think that's one of the oldest proprietary developing chemicals, because when people sort of say you can do it in coffee and beer, the answer is you can do it in lemon juice as well.
Yeah.
It's not obviously not quite as obvious, but yes, ascorbic acid, it's a sodium compound, and it works
fantastic.
On silver. So that'd be your next thing,
is doing
lemon squash.
I would love to
yeah.
brush up on
yeah.
chemistry, because it was my worst subject at school.
Which is interesting. You've
it
got
wasn't
into
bad,
it.
Like I got a B, but it was, you know, it
yeah.
was. I wasn't.
Yeah, right. So,
I really didn't like it.
So you really haven't drifted into this from the point of being a chemistry
no,
geek as
absolutely
such?
Absolutely not. And actually, I've got so much to learn on that side of things.
Yes.
But actually, the way I come at it is as an artist, really, with
yeah.
materials, seeing what my materials can do. And
yes.
for years, for quite a long time, I spent a lot of time in the dark room messing around with different things
yes.
and chemicals. And now I feel I'm in a position where I can apply those techniques a bit more, and knowing how to apply them and teaching others how to apply
yes.
them. So with cross-processing as well, I love processing ectochrome in C41.
Yes.
I love doing that. The
yeah,
colours are fantastic.
You get all those weird sort of
colour
odd
negative,
curves, don't you?
Yeah.
That was going to be my next question, which of course is always going to interest anybody involved in Super 8. Now the lab has gone. What can you do with old Kodachrome?
Okay, well... You can process it in caffeinol.
Yeah.
Best bet is to develop it as a negative.
Okay.
Because you won't really know how well it's been stored and treated and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Unless it's been in your own freezer for the past 10 years. But best bet, process is negative. Caffeinol.
Right.
Or any other black and white developer. D76 is a nice gentle one that you can do for a fairly good amount of time. Say about 8 or 9 minutes maybe, even.
Oh right, D76 will work on it, yes.
Yeah, it's quite gentle.
Yeah.
Any black and white developer will work on Kodachrome 40.
Right.
Because it's at base, essentially, a black and white film.
Right, yes, because the Kodachrome
it's
a complex dye couple thing, but yes, it's got
a
monochrome base, which is why, of course, it has such lovely shadows. It actually had a black layer in it. And what sort of negative do you get out of it? Is there an orange and black negative? Orange
and black. So the orange is there, it's like a residue from the fact that it was intended for a colour. Process.
You mean it has an orange mask like colour
like
negative film does?
Sort of. It's similar. It's a bit stronger. I think it's a bit stronger orange than colour negative, actually. I like it.
Yeah.
If you think about flipping it in post-production or even making a 16mm print from it, you're going to have some issues, because what you'd have would be then white and kind of a light blue, mid to light blue, which isn't fantastic for an image.
It's sort of pretty, but
only
if you want to live with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other thing, I suppose, with an orange mask, that is quite a lot of stuff, so it's going to lower contrast on a resulting print,
absolutely.
Isn't it?
Absolutely.
Because you get a certain amount of mask in your effect, don't you?
Totally. So,
Because it's meant to work in blue-green light spectrum for printing, so orange gets in the way of that.
Yeah, it does. So you can get rid of it to a degree in post-production digitally, but what I've found especially works with processing ektachrome as black and white.
Oh, right.
Which I had to do once in a workshop because the Swiss Post failed on two occasions to deliver the chemistry that had been ordered by a workshop I was running at VideoX. So we had no alternative but to run the colour Super 8 filmmaking workshop using black and white chemistry, and we still made colour films because they were orange and black.
Oh, right.
And it was fantastic.
Just not the intended colours.
Yeah, just not the intended colours.
Yes.
And it was wonderful. And I discovered by chance, I just tried something, which was to put a handful of citric acid into some water. I didn't even measure how much, just like a cup of water and a kind of handful of this stuff. And I soaked the film in that developing it. And that really greatly lessened the orange masking, the dye residue.
Oh, right. Or the layer. It part bleaches it back.
Yeah, and so you get a kind of pale yellow instead of orange, which is much more desirable if you're after a black and white negative.
Yes, because it doesn't get in the way of the light thing. And the last question I want to ask you is, obviously we're on the cusp of everybody saying digital is going to take over the world. Film is dead. Now, film isn't dead, and you're nevertheless doing something about it. What do you see is the immediate future of film manufacture? And, well, I mean, film chemistry will carry on looking after itself, but what do you actually think the immediate future actually is? Is film going to hang on as a little niche thing forevermore, or do you think one day people would say, that's it, we don't make any more film, there is no money in it?
I think one day that will happen, probably. Yeah,
yes.
I'd imagine. But I don't think that day's particularly soon. I think that what the future of... I'm not sure, actually, it will totally happen, but I think the future of film in the immediate future is that it's going to continue. It's rising in popularity, I think. It's gaining in popularity all the time.
It's got a funny sort of dead cat bounce effect. I suppose we're in the middle of that. You keep wondering, well, is that going to sustain? And is it going to sustain manufacturers?
Yes, I know.
To say, well, we're going to carry on supporting this because there is good money in it.
I think manufacturers with foresight could do well out of it, but not on a gigantic scale, perhaps. Kodak, for example.
Yes.
I mean, if they fold as well, it means it's going to be very difficult.
That is
for
what.
Us
nobody knows the future of Kodak.
No.
As we speak, it's still in bankruptcy protection and obviously looking hard at its options.
Yeah.
And they still effectively have the monopoly. Because the thing about doing Super 8.
But the fact they haven't axed it
already. Somebody's
got
to keep making boxes for it as well.
Well, the fact they haven't axed it already says something.
For which we're very grateful, and the fact they keep the trouble is they keep filling
it out
stock.
Of the goodness of their heart. So there is some.
So there is a viable
something
level.
Lucrative about it,
yes.
And also I think that with the Impossible Project, the way that took on the Polaroid,
that was the one to reinvent Polaroid.
Stuff, I can see that sort of thing happening with Super 8. I think there are a lot of people working with reperforation gear and film splitting gear who are making slide film stocks, for example, into cine film stocks like Velvia 50D. Vitner sell it. And
I was about to say, you can buy it from Vitner sell film stocks you can't see in this country.
Vitner's fantastic, isn't it? Vitner's. What's it called now? ADOX or something.
ADOX. Now, yes.
And that, I reckon, might be microfilm stock.
Well, I know a little bit about ADOX. ADOX certainly make
microfilm
stuff.
I love these conversations.
Well, the other interesting thing about ADOX is ADOX are one of these companies that are rescuing old black and white formulations from still film.
Oh, okay.
In that quite a lot of stuff that's sold as ADOX, as far as what happens is a lot of the German film manufacturers, the large market ones, said we're not going to carry on manufacturing because there's no money for us, but we will sell on the recipe.
Yeah.
And apparently quite a lot of what people like ADOX and Mako are doing is old Agfa formulations, which they've said, well, there's a market for us, we can afford to make it smaller volumes.
Yeah.
And ADOX, ADOX are doing quite interesting things like they certainly make a high contrast film stocks available in 35mm as a fine grain recording film, which may originally have been a microfilm. Yes, ADOX, I think, go back to that.
Because I actually
use they're offering that Super 8, are they?
Well, yeah, they've just started.
Wow. They just started
it. Yeah. So new stocks are being offered.
As long as there's new stuff coming, that's great.
50D.
Yes.
Negative from Kodak. Colour negative.
Yes.
Just, you know, started being offered. That's great. A new thing for Super 8. So
you're genuinely optimistic.
I am. But I tend to be anyway. But I think use it while you can, for sure. And also use it, rather than conserve it.
That's the critical thing. If nobody uses it, then we will destruction ourselves, won't we?
Absolutely. So you can make film stock yourself.
Oh, yes, you do a coating workshop, don't you? Tell us about that, then.
Well, mixing gelatin. I learnt it from Alex McKenzie and Robert Schaller at a workshop at Worm Filmwerkplatz in Rotterdam.
Right.
Organised by Esther Ulluf. That was fantastic, where we learnt how to use gelatin, mixed gelatin, with silver nitrate and potassium bromide to make black and white emulsion, essentially to make liquid light, which you then paint onto the clear acetate base, which is ready-made and cut, and which is basically you can make by having old film and bleaching it in toilet bleach and washing it.
Right, just to clean it back to clear acetate. And you have to sort of sit there and paint this stuff in complete darkness.
No, red safe light.
It will work on safe light.
Yeah.
Is it not a continuous light stock?
Well, the mixing part of it has to be done. Half of it has to be done in blackness, where you're mixing. You mix the two solutions separately, and then you add them together. But the adding them together has to be done in blackness. And then red safe light is when you can paint onto the stock. You know, it's a low speed emulsion. You can do things to the emulsion to help speed it up a bit. Like slower cooling, for example, which allows the crystals to grow more.
And presumably, if it works under safe light, it's not fully panchromatic.
No.
Yes, which of course is very interesting, because you then get sort of lovely tonal distortions and contrast, which
is
lovely.
And it's bad, because if you're painting it on, you have to paint it on with brushes that don't have any metal on them, hopefully, to avoid affecting the chemistry, you have to
work with plastic and nylon only.
So you can also use, Alex McKenzie showed me something where you can use wooden, what are they called, the Chinese ink brushes that you can get in Chinatown very cheaply.
Nice
kind of hair brushes, but with wooden metal on them. They work lovely.
Yes.
Nice and soft brushes.
Yes. Also, presumably, if you've made a winding mechanism of some sort, you could coat with a glass rod, which is supposed to be the perfect way.
Yeah.
Right.
So you can get kind of, you can also use an airbrush, but that tends to clog the head of the airbrush because it's quite gelatinous, obviously. But that works very well. It does.
Yeah. Okay, well, thanks for that interview. It's very interesting. We're now going to go and listen to James McKay, watch some films, and best luck with the rest of the workshop.
Thanks so much. Cheers.